Today's day is March 7th, 2024. It is 5:30 p.m. and the Ponce Inlet Essential Services Advisory Board meeting is now called to order. Can we please stand for the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we do the roll call?
Mr. Cox?
Roll call.
Roll call. Mr. Cox?
Here.
Mr. McConaughey?
Here.
Mr. Pulver?
Here.
Ms. Wurst?
Here.
Ms. Valerian?
Here.
Mr. Witt?
Here.
Mr. Suster?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. We're going to move to adoption of the agenda. Does anybody have any changes to the agenda for tonight? Then I will make a motion that we move to adopt as presented. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Approval of the meeting notes of January 11th. Does anybody have any changes? Then I will make a motion that we approve as presented. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. We have our attorney here today, Mr. Hand, so we're going to go right into a little bit of board training.
Sir? Okay. Thank you, sir, and good evening, everyone. Happy to be here tonight and go over some of these materials with you. In the almost 20 years that I've been coming here, I don't believe I've ever made a presentation to this board. I think it may be the first time. Has everyone had a Sunshine presentation before? So first for a few, but most have already seen this material and heard it. No matter how many times you have heard it or haven't heard it, it's always great to hear it again because I think that the folks who we really see get in trouble a lot for Sunshine Law are very experienced city members for whatever reason, you know, guard gets let down, and of course, usually when there have been some prosecutions and so forth, they're dealing with intentional issues, which never seen, of course, with any of our clients. But I do see a pattern sometimes of issues where things can go awry, and we'll talk a little bit about that. It looks like Peg has put together some great materials for you. You know, if you ever feel like going through some of these and taking a look, these are very helpful. Additionally, we are always available. I'm always available to answer any questions that you have if there's something to be clarified. When I do these kind of presentations, I like to do it informally. So if there's a example that you have that you want to ask me about or just a question that you have during the presentation, feel free to interrupt me at any point in time, and I'll be happy to go over your question or address whatever you're wondering about, and we can have a dialogue. That's generally how I like to do it. So feel free to interrupt me, and just getting started, we'll go through some of the issues regarding Sunshine Law. So the first thing to keep in mind is that Sunshine Law, a violation of Sunshine Law, can be a criminal violation if there's an intent to have a communication with another member of the same board. Volunteers, does not matter that you all are all volunteers, you can still get in trouble. No one cares on the prosecutory side whether you're trying to help your community. It is a strict liability law, so if there is a violation, there will be a prosecution. If you get prosecuted, it is until you are exonerated, it is up to you to pay those attorney costs. Those fall upon you even though you're a volunteer. So something else to keep in mind, it's a very heavy-hitting law. Every way around the Sunshine Law, circumvention has failed. When I advise clients, because it's not always the clearest, the regulations are not always the clearest, always take a conservative approach, because the court always takes a conservative approach when deciding these if there ever is an issue that comes up. So something important to keep in mind. Even in the event of a prosecution, if you are innocent, it's a painful process. Fortunately, there hasn't been. I have not had a conviction, again, with any of my clients, but I have been party to, or not party to, but I have seen probably over the course of my career 7 or 8 different investigations, and many of them were public. By public, I mean numerous newspaper articles. It's just not a pleasant process to go through. So anything that you can do, anything that I can do, other counsel can do to keep you out of even having to deal with any of that is what we want to have happen. What does the law say? Well, the Sunshine Law is found in Chapter 286. It's Chapter 286.011. That's the citation. Very simple requirements. The law requires that meetings of boards or commissions be open to the public. Reasonable notice of the meetings must be given, and minutes of the meeting must be taken. That is it. That's it. That seems very clear. But somehow those three tenets have generated case law stacked about this high when it comes to interpretation. So it becomes quite a bit more complicated in practice. As far as your board, it's your job to talk to citizens about city business, but what it applies to is your communications with members of the same board. So you can talk to members of the public, you can talk to town council, you can talk to members of other boards, but anything that could foreseeably come before this board, that's where you can't have communications outside of a notice meeting that meets those three requirements. And that's where we have some issues. What is a board or commission? Well, this is a board, an advisory board, but this law applies to any type of agency board. It does not apply to the state legislature. They exempted themselves from it, but made everybody else subject to it. That is the way it is. What constitutes a meeting? A meeting is any type of interaction that you would have with any other member of your board about business that, once again, could foreseeably come before your board. And some of the things to keep in mind is, even if it's a matter that's already been decided, you still can't talk about it because it could come back. So in other words, if it's within your purview, something you could advise on or discuss or something this board handles, outside of this notice meeting, be careful not to have those type of interactions. When I say interactions, it applies to any kind of communications, phone calls, emails, memos, letters, chats in the hall. One point I will make, I have never, ever, ever been to a meeting where I didn't see something that could have been a Sunshine violation. Typically, you know, when I arrive at a meeting, just like today, even though I came a little bit later than usual, everybody's seated at the die and presumably are just having sort of friendly communications. Hi, how are you? You know, how's your daughter? My son's doing great. You know, he's doing well at school. Those type of communications. But I can't hear, and that means members of the public can't hear that. One of the things that's really important to that I really can't drive home enough is Sunshine Law is really all about perception. And that's where really folks who are innocent, you know, you have seen prosecutions and so forth, simply based on the fact that they were up someplace in front of the public and had some sort of an interaction and, you know, perhaps a political opponent, perhaps someone who thought something was, you know, not in conformance with the law, made a report and created an investigation. What I'm saying is that one of the things to really keep in mind is I think that board members, just in general, may have a tendency, once seated at the die, to sort of let their guard down. You know, the gavel has not dropped yet, so there cannot be any communications about city business. I typically do see sometimes, and I have witnessed this before, after a meeting, gavel is down at that point, and someone's like, you know, I really liked your thoughts on that. Here's what I thought, too. That's the problem, because no one is trying to circumvent the Sunshine Law. You know, these officials that I see sometimes, they're sitting up there still like business is being conducted, but the meeting's over. So when it's over, it's over. before it starts, hasn't started yet. Always very important to keep the mindset. Between the gavel, that's when the business is done. Once it's over, it's back to Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, what's going on at school, what's going on with husbands and wives. Just social interactions. Cannot be city business once that gavel hits, once the meeting is over. And the biggest problem probably is parking lots. You know, and that's where some of these conversations happen. That people walk out and, you know, perhaps not in the dais anymore, but out in the parking lot, hey, see you later. Again, that sort of communications go back and forth. It creates an opportunity for for violations. So keep your guard up, gavel down, only in between. When I talk about what's foreseeable, again, that is any sort of chance at all that it could ever come before your board. Something important to keep in mind. Things are never over, ever, even after they're decided. If you absolutely need to meet with another member of your board, best to coordinate that through city staff, or town staff, pardon me. In that case, you know, if there has to be a communication, staff can assist you making the proper notice, taking minutes, and meeting all the statutory requirements. So if there has to be some sort of interaction or communication for some sort of a special meeting or a one-on-one type of thing, just go through town staff. Of course, they can communicate with us if need be, and make sure that all the requisite requirements are met. I think one of the things to keep in mind, too, is common sense doesn't always matter when it comes to these issues. There was an issue some time ago where there was a financial advisory board where a contentious issue came up. There was a heated verbal exchange of words, and exactly what I described before happened after, or happened. What I described a few minutes ago happened after the meeting. Simply an apology. You know, I'm sorry, and this is the way that I felt because of this. Again, something that really has to be avoided in communications. Manners and common sense really go out the window here. Anything that you have to say to each other really has to be said during the meeting. Now, there are exceptions. One of the notable exceptions, which is really not an exception, is a social meeting exception. That just simply means that all of you as board members can still, you're not barred from speaking to each other outside of a meeting. Anything that could not feasibly come before this board, fair game. So again, those conversations that I was talking about before, what's going on with family, normal things that friends may discuss or acquaintances, that's all fine. Even though case law characterizes an exception, it really isn't city business, right? Or not board business, per se. So you all can communicate with each other about that. It's just careful to, it's important to be careful about perception. Another thing to keep in mind is you may have political interests that are aligned or some sort of local business where you attend perhaps a county meeting. And if there are more than one of you there, so two or more of you, and you have an interaction, there's a problem. If you ever foresee a circumstance where you and other members of your board may wish to attend a particular meeting like that and interact with that board, which may lead to interactions inadvertently between yourselves, again, let town staff know because they can notice it, and then it becomes a meeting as long as the public is able to attend, minutes are kept, et cetera. So that's something typically that, especially for council members, for planning commission members, we typically do if we know they're going to be in a place all at once. Just notices in a meeting, and then it's covered. So something to keep in mind there. There is another exception, although I don't recommend ever availing yourselves of it, of sending out a position paper. For a sunshine violation to occur, there has to be an exchange, right? There has to be communication going one way, communication going back another way. There is an exception for position paper, which allows a member of a board to publish their position, whether it's via email or some other manner, to other members of the board. But there's a few problems with that. Once that goes out, no one can reply to it. So if a position paper goes out, essentially one board member disenfranchises other board members from expressing their position. So other board members may not appreciate a position paper because it only allows for that one-way communication. Nobody else can respond to it. Technically, it's not a violation, but just as a matter of practice, do encourage you to avoid availing yourselves of that particular exception. Another thing to keep in mind with the Sunshine Law are boundaries. There are none. There have been successful prosecutions for communications that happened in other countries, far across state lines, and those can be criminal prosecutions if people... the earliest ones were criminal prosecutions where individuals intentionally left the state so they could communicate. Doesn't matter where you are anywhere in the world, the long arm of the law still reaches and brings you back here in Florida, and a violation in Washington, D.C. or elsewhere is still a violation that is prosecutable. So something important to keep in mind. One of the things, too, I had mentioned before, I think that's really important to reiterate, is we live right now in a time where technology is changing rapidly. And it's, again, important to remember that Sunshine Law, when it comes to violations, encompasses any type of method of communication. That includes one-way Facebook posts, for instance, if it's on Facebook. That's one medium that really causes me a lot of concern, because somebody puts out a position per se, and if someone types a response back to it in a manner that is a Sunshine violation, even though it's really can be read by the public. Twitter has been another one. Initially, text messaging caused me a lot of concern. Early in my career, I used to take my phone and go make copies, you know, for public records purposes of text message I received, because it's also a public records issue. But again, any type of communication is encompassed by the Sunshine Law. There have been recently, there's a number of news articles, just the type of search, Sunshine Law prosecutions. Of course, there was a big case up by the Villages that wasn't intentional and ultimately resulted in some pretty severe penalties against the perpetrators. But of course, they were intending to circumnavigate the law. If it's not intentional, again, it's still prosecutable. And even if it's, the important thing to remember too with this is when there's an investigation, it's not done by the Commission on Ethics. It's done by a state attorney. And so that sort of character permeates investigations and, of course, prosecutions. It's just a note of, hey, you may be guilty of a crime here. So something that we certainly want to avoid. Note passing as well during meetings, important to remember. One example that I'll tell you this story early on, because it's a good story. As an example, it's not my story, but early on in my partner Cliff's career, town attorney here, he was representing a city, still does today, and what they had been doing in practice, much like this board, they met in the evening, right around dinner time, and this particular city hall at the time had a glass room where any member of the public could see into the glass room, but you know, there was a door, all glass sort of on three corners, and you couldn't hear what was going on. And this kind of hits a few notes, both with perception, with things to avoid, and ultimately how an investigation progresses. What was the practice at the time, all the board members would meet probably about half an hour prior to the meeting and bring a bagged lunch type, well, dinner in this case, and have those kind of conversations that I was talking about earlier, just social conversation, sports, whatever it may be. And a political adversary of one of the members of the board, of course, witnessed that and made a report. It's also worthy to note that the police chief was one of the individuals who was sitting in on the board dinners prior to the meeting occurring. So had there been an actual violation, it would have been the duty of the police chief to make a report. So there wasn't any funny business going on. But that being said, there was still a report made, which resulted in an investigation, which resulted in about 6 months' worth of newspaper articles, speculation, and negative press. Ultimately, everyone was exonerated, but it was not a particularly enjoyable process for anyone. So that really is what I wanted to cover tonight on Sunshine Law for this evening. If you have any questions or examples, anything you'd like to discuss, I'm happy to talk about it. Yes, sir.
Question.
Sure.
If you're not a voting member, can you communicate with a voting member?
No. Okay. If you're a member of the board, then no, that would be problematic.
Is that a good question?
Sure.
If I'm talking to my people right next to me, they're on the same board, we're in this public setting, but they can't hear what I'm saying. I'm just talking to them like social conversation, like we were talking about a minute ago, looking at these people through the glass window. They can see them talking, but they can't hear what they're saying. Mm-hmm. So he can accuse them. Would a person from the public be able to accuse me of violating that Sunshine Law if I'm talking to one of my board members?
Sure. There are no...
They can't hear. I mean, they couldn't hear what I said.
Right. I mean, ultimately, for there to be a prosecution, there has to be a probable cause being found and so forth. And so there are some hurdles to jump over if a report is made. But there's nothing that prevents a member from the public from making any kind of report, whether it's truthful or not. A report can be made at any point in time, and it will not be ignored if the report is made. Now, of course, there are issues with making an untruthful report. And, you know, someone who reports something untruthfully may or may not suffer the consequences for that. But as for a report being made and someone not hearing something, that certainly could be an issue. Now, that the example you gave me doesn't result in a violation, but I certainly can't tell you that it wouldn't result in an investigation.
Hmm. Investigation could mean having to hire an attorney to protect yourself.
It is a possibility, yes. So again, why perception is so important.
Gotcha.
Mr. Hand, you mentioned other public meetings. So for example, we have a noticed city council meeting, and it's not uncommon for members to attend those meetings, more than one member. So are you suggesting, I know perception is everything, that we should not even exchange pleasantries in that meeting? Or because it's a city noticed meeting and we work for the City Council, would we be covered under those circumstances in this room?
I certainly am not telling you, because ultimately, you know, it's a balance, and it's a sliding scale of how much risk you as board members are willing to take on, right? Because I certainly don't want to sit in this chair and tell you, you know, I mean, the safest route, of course, is just never to talk to each other. Because then you basically don't have a problem. But that doesn't work in small communities where people are friends and work together and have relationships, right? And so it's a matter of risk that you have to decide for yourselves to take on. And certainly, no, I wouldn't say don't say hi to this person and don't engage in pleasantries. But be aware of your surroundings. Be aware of, you know, who may have out for what. And engage and proceed with caution whenever you're having. Always have that sort of cautionary air about you when dealing with other board members of what could happen and how your communications can be perceived, have witnesses. You know, if it's a stressful political time, I mean, you know, have a witness near you if you're going to engage in a communication who can attest to it. There are just simple precautions like that, I think, that can be taken, and you have to make that judgment call. And if it's going to be a back and forth, if you know that several members may be attending a council meeting and there are pressing issues that really, you know, pertain to your board, again, another idea to speak to town staff and have that noticed as a meeting for you as well. Happens a lot with planning commission members and some of other jurisdictions with my clients where we know we have some issues coming up and some pending ordinance legislation adoption, whatever, just as an example. And a council meeting will also be noticed as a planning commission meeting, even though it's not, you know, a planning commission meeting per se. It's just anticipated that we may have some planning commission members who are maybe communicating with council that, you know, may be perceived as a crossover communication between the two. So it's just another precaution that can be taken. All right. Anything else? Well, again, I'm happy to have Ben here to cover some of this material, and you know, it is scary stuff. It doesn't always seem like it is, but those investigations, I can promise, are very unpleasant for everybody. So, always best to be on your guard, and that's the best advice I can give you. So, all the best, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
We are going to move to old business. So our town manager and our staff have been tasked throughout the year with reviewing their respective departments, as well as working together to present capital budget requests that are in the best interest of the citizens of Ponce Inlet. Although a number of capital requests have been made, it was requested by me and maybe others that Mr. Disher once again meet with town staff and come up with a priority list. And really kind of illustrate which items they believe should definitely be included in the 2024-2025 budget. As we all know, all capital expenses over $50,000, all those requests must come in front of this board for review and for recommendations. Although I believe all these items have been presented to this board in previous meetings, at least most of them anyways, anyways, I just encourage our board members to ask a lot of questions, to have good dialogue, and then as we move forward, we can listen to all the presentations per department, and then I suggest that we vote on any motions or what we want to move forward or recommendations to the city council after we have all the presentations, and we can go through them one by one at that point. But anyways, during the presentations, I encourage everyone to ask questions. So with that said, Mr. Griffith, would you like to start with your presentation? And I think Chief Scales may be assisting here.
Good evening. Dan Scales, Public Safety Director, Fire Chief. I'm going to take the opportunity and give Fred a break tonight. He's been talking a lot today. Really, what I wanted to do is talk more globally about the list that you've been provided by staff and maybe help explain where these things came from, not just from Public Works, but you know, all of the departments that came together. Because you will notice that there are some items on this list that were not in the presentations, I believe, back in January. And some of the priorities in the various departments have changed. One may have been moved up, one may have been moved down. And there's a very good explanation for that. When we prepare these initial memos in January, you know, that is our best guess at the time. As time goes on, conditions change, priorities change. So we've had a lot of time and opportunity to really nail down and drill down specifically to what we need to have. But we've also included information here on projects that you prioritized last year, and you can see what the progress of those projects are this year. And some of those projects have been brought forward to you again for next year. So with that, and I'm at your disposal, I can go down the list specifically and talk about each item, or if you, however you'd like to do that. Except for one exception, Chief Glazier is going to speak about the public safety boat, and Chief Launderville is going to talk about the fire apparatus. So they'll be doing a little presentation on those. Unless you have specific questions on the list themselves. But this listing here is staff's recommendation for our priorities next year.
I have a question. So you said that the priorities have changed since January. Are they going to change again?
No, this is going to be the final list. This is it. Yep, good question.
So I don't know if everybody's had a chance. You know, this afternoon we had this priority list was emailed to us, and of course it's in front of everybody tonight. So Chief, I think maybe if we could go through, let's go by the priority list.
Sure.
Because that way you can explain some things that you may have reduced in this year's budget and offered to next year, what have you. We can still talk about them if we have questions.
Okay.
So why don't we go by the 24-25 priority list.
My pleasure. The first priority we've identified is really a continuation of a project that is underway right now, and that's the installation of the stormwater one-way or check valves on a few locations in town. And what these are going to do are going to prevent really tidal flooding. So when the river level rises, right now the water backs up through the stormwater system and can actually either flood the street or exacerbate flooding that's already there. These check valves will prevent that. Currently in this fiscal year, we're in the process of doing the design of the project, and hopefully we might be able to get one deployed this year, but we have to see where the money goes and how the timing is. So what we've done is we're pretty sure we're going to have to finish it next fiscal year. It is a town council priority. We know it's a town priority to get these stormwater projects funded and complete. So that is our number one priority going into next year on this list. It was not in any of the memos, really, because it's a continuation of a project that we started last year. Any questions on that?
How many valves do you have?
We're going to do three right now, one at Anchor, one at Old Carriage, and one at Front Street.
Okay.
Yep, those are the years.
And they're $180,000 each?
No, that's actually the project, when we initially got the working quote from our engineering firm, was a little light. So the entire project is looking about $200,000-$250,000. So this money here is the additional funds to complete the project, in addition to the funds budgeted this year.
Oh, gotcha.
So that's for all three of the valves.
So you already put in
$70,000? Actually, there's $120,000 that we did last year.
Oh.
And part of that's going to be used for the design and initial construction. And this will be the amount to finish the project.
And that's all done by a third party?
Yes. Yep. Anything else on that? The second one is the additional water system personnel, and this was requested last year. This board recommended an additional public works person last year, which was funded, but it'll be acquired mid-year, which will be sometime in the next few months. We'll be hiring that person and bringing them on board. And we're asking for one more for next fiscal year, also to be funded at mid-year. We had experienced this year, you know, like we experience every year. We had two individuals on light duty that could not do the full capabilities of the job, and actually one of those individuals passed away. And with routine sickness, vacation, public works is always short-staffed. They still do a fantastic job. They do what they can do, but the additional staff really means a lot as far as accomplishing the tasks that they have to accomplish. One of our focuses continues to be, you know, improving and maintaining the water system. That's one of our highest priorities in public works, is making sure the water system is safe and all the components work the way that they're supposed to work. That requires people to do maintenance. And I wish I could say that we did a great job of maintaining all of the system forever and ever, but that's not the case. I will tell you the system is working fine. It is safe. It's inspected. It's doing what it needs to be doing. What we want to do is make it better. Work on the valves, isolating the valves, make sure that they shut off when they need to shut off. Just doing routine maintenance that needs to be done every single day. That's going to enhance the system and make it work better. So if we do get a water main break, we can isolate a smaller section of town. We impact less people. So these individuals would not specifically be assigned just to the water system. They would be shared through public works. That's why it's split half with the general fund, which is the taxable money, and half with the enterprise fund, which is the water system fund. And that's funded through the water bill. So half the position would be funded through water and half through the general fund.
So I have a question on that. So initially you said 60,000. Now in this priority list, you're only saying 30,000 out of the next budget, the other half out of the water fund.
Correct.
But this is a reoccurring cost. It's not like we're going to fire this employee after the year. So can that water fund sustain the funding of this position through the years? Because I don't know, maybe you or Mr. Disher could tell us how much is in that water fund and what other items are taken out of it. But are there if we're voting on something to go forward, should we not vote to fully fund the position, or is the water fund going to be able to sustain the funding throughout the years? Does that make sense?
That's a great question. I just had this conversation with the finance director, and she did tell me the amount. I don't remember what it was. I had too much time, but I did talk to her specifically about these items, and yes, all of these things that have been projected in here, even the legacy costs from the personnel, are considered in the water fund, and that's one of the reasons that we had a rate increase recently, is to make sure that not only is the operating fund sufficient, but our reserves are sufficient. So that's exactly why we increased those water rates, to make sure we did have the funding for these projects going forward.
And by ordinance, I assume the water fund can only fund projects related to water.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
Okay. So you guys are fine. Oh, I'm sorry, you guys. The staff is fine with moving forward with just half funding for this position out of the actual operating budget?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Anybody else?
The next item is a replacement fire truck. This was not on last year's list. As the fire department has gone through the accreditation process, that process has helped identify risks, needs, and better ways to mitigate and handle those needs. Plus, our staffing has increased from when we first started looking at all these things. We have recommended funding, or at least ordering, an aerial apparatus, which we talked about last meeting. We had a discussion on that. I know I talked to some of you folks about that as well. What we're asking for is to move forward with ordering the piece of apparatus. We're recommending a 75-foot Quint. What that means is we would do an initial down payment to order the piece of equipment, and we would do a lease purchase to purchase the vehicle, and we can do 9 years, 10 years, depending on how much money we want to put down. And that is something that we'll have to discuss with finance as far as how they want to handle that part of that. We theoretically would not have to make payments on this until we took delivery, which is at least 2 to 3 years out from when we order. We're not going to see a vehicle. We could pay the principal during that time if we wanted to, before we had to actually do the financing. But again, that's something we'll be talking with finance about, just conceptually, to get this order in place so we get on the waiting list to get this thing replaced. Our current truck is old, and it's costing us money to repair, and it affects the reliability of it. So that it's just time to replace it. We've gotten more than our fair share of years out of this piece of apparatus. 10 years is a good rule of thumb, and we've exceeded that by probably 4 or 5 years. So we've got our money's worth out of that vehicle. Our plan is to take whatever vehicle we do get, to take that vehicle and make it a reserve apparatus. So if we do have to do maintenance on the main truck, we have another truck. That will serve well as a reserve piece. It's not going to be used as much. We could probably get another 10 years out of it as a reserve piece. So staff is recommending we proceed with the acquisition of an aerial. And just to kind of give you an idea of, did a quick number of structures in town, we've got about 35 multi-story condominiums in town. We've got about 50-some townhomes in town, and probably about 20 commercial mercantile properties in town. That's in Ponce Inlet. Not to mention the 2, 3, 4-story homes that you see, especially along Atlantic and along Peninsula and all in Las Olas. It's a challenge to deal with those if we do get something in those upper floors. And this, yes.
Can, first of all, so we're talking about the 1,500,000.
Yes.
And then is that 210,000 annual lease? Is that for that, or is that for the other, for the $1 million?
That would be for the Quint.
And that would be for the Quint.
And that number is fluid. That's a worst-case number, just to give you an idea of the numbers we're talking about if we decide to do a finance option with this.
And then, can you remind, I think we discussed this in January, of what height the quint is, 75 feet, but yes. What the height of the actual, of where it can actually reach?
Well, it depends on how far away from the building it is, and obviously the further away, the shorter the reach.
If so, on average?
Probably about, 55, 60 feet?
Because it has to be at 72 degrees just to be able to climb it, or certain rescues is like a lower angle. But I put in the presentation, I have 5 stories roughly.
And currently, what's your, what are you able to do?
My name is Joe Longeville, Deputy Chief. The ground ladders are 24 feet, and you can look at journals and so forth. Currently, we're going to go about the second-story window, second-story roof ledge with a 24-foot ladder. And that's us carrying the ladder, to the structure at about a 72-degree angle, which is the little L you see on the side of your ladder, basically is the same angle. So depending on what kind of frontage of the structure, what kind of other obstacles are in play. So that would take us up to approximately 5-story structure. And that is give and take depending on the angle, what we're doing as far as type of work. If it's an elevated water stream, if it's a rescue operation, or we're just trying to gain access. The other option is once we go up there, it's also a means of egress for the firefighters who made it into a structure and may have to exit in a different way. In other words, they went upstairs and now they need to find a new way to get out of the structure. One way we can do that is bailout, which is a small little rope they carry with them and hook to the windowsill or whatever and basically make their way out of the structure, or basically have the ladder to that part of the building and allowing them to get out at those upper levels. The other thing we considered was the hazard identification of boat storage and those types of things as far as reaching multiple racks of stored items and actually getting us a little elevated fire opportunity there. As far as firefighting and any other commercial structures and any future, as far as, of course, this truck will be with us for nearly a decade after we receive it.
So currently, if you have a need to reach a higher structure, you're having to ask the Shores to come in?
Orange? I'll let the chief speak on that.
That's a great question. The closest comparable piece of apparatus is at Botiford in Atlantic, or City Center in Port Orange. The Shores does not have a ladder truck. They did. It's out of service. So they have to rely on Daytona, which is much closer to them than they are to us. And that's a challenge with a ladder. You got to put it in the right place. And unfortunately, if it's too far down the line of units responding, unfortunately, I've seen sometimes it's just carrying people. You got a ladder truck there because other apparatus have blocked it in. They can't deploy it. So having something like that early on scene, it's easier to deploy, it's easier to utilize. So a truck coming from Botiford or from City Center may or may not be able to be used.
And Chief, that's the largest ladder that fire departments utilize today, correct?
No. They're much larger, 100 feet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
My next question is, what's the highest level in Ponce Inlet do we have?
7 stories.
So what do you do in that instance?
So that's a great question. The good news is all of the construction of those 7-story buildings are what are called exterior exits. So when you come out of your unit, you're coming outside. You're not going into an atrium. Those fires you fight from the stairwell. That's how you fight those fires, and that's where people go, is to the stairwells. The reality is, even if we had a ladder truck that could reach it, positioning close enough to the building is difficult, especially if there's underground parking lots. So this truck would be helpful in that situation, but I'm looking at it more from the multi-story single-family residents and the townhomes and the commercial properties. Those are the ones that I worry about the most as far as gaining access to.
Then you mentioned in the description here about that this will improve the town's ISO rating, which impacts property insurance rates in Ponce Inlet. Do you have a clue of what percentage of, I mean, the residents, if we're looking at this kind of expense, I think they'd like to know how much money we're saving.
I wish I could tell you, and I'm not being flippant. For whatever reason, it's a big secret on what a reduction or what a piece of apparatus or a rating would do for an individual community. And that's something that we've all, and I can't explain why, but there is and most of that impact is also felt by the commercial properties and the multifamily residents as well. So I don't have I can't tell you, unfortunately, but it would improve it. Understand, that's a bonus. That's not just the reason. It's a bonus. It's another bonus to have that.
And then my last question is, okay, you mentioned that you would keep the current fire truck as a backup or a second. How much in repairs on average per year do we spend on repairing that to keep it up? And how much will the new fire truck have in repairs on average? Do you have an estimate?
The current truck's averaging between $15,000 and $20,000 a year. It's literally, every time I hear that it has to go to the shop, that's a $2,000 or $3,000 bill. It just is. The maintenance will go down on that vehicle once it goes into reserve status because it's not going to be used as much. It will be used some, but it won't be used as much. And there will be maintenance that we will have to do to that truck just like we do the other vehicles. This vehicle, there will be maintenance, ladder maintenance. There'll be more maintenance than we would have for a regular fire truck. Nowhere near what we're spending on the piece of apparatus now. Ladder testing, ladder maintenance, pump testing you would do anyways. Really, it's not going to get run that much, so tires and brakes aren't as much of an issue as if it were, say, going from city center, running 10 calls a day. So the maintenance should it's very manageable. But it's not just maintenance. It's reliability, and it's capability. But maintenance decrease is a big benefit as well.
One of the other real important things about having that reserve apparatus is when that first apparatus goes for regular routine maintenance, brakes, tires, annual inspections, things like that, you're without a pump in the city, essentially. So those are 1,500 GPM pumps that we don't have a second one if that one's gone. So we have to borrow from another municipality. Then they're short now. A device. So if we can hang on to one and the maintenance isn't unrealistic, then it's worth it to have that for those downtimes.
And the other thing I'd just like to throw in there, Chief Launderville gave me some additional things to consider because he loves doing research. He does a great job with it. You know, a Quint, it's not just a ladder. It's also a pumper. So you're really getting two trucks for the price of one and a half. Because you're getting the capability of a pumper and a ladder for one and a half the cost. So that's kind of an interesting way to look at it because people fixate on the ladder, which is important, but it also does all the jobs as a regular fire truck. So
that's good information. Help me understand it a little bit more.
Thank you.
An engine and a truck, not two trucks, right?
Correct, sir. Engine and a truck. Pumper and a ladder, yes.
And not... I just want to, is there enough room for it? Because now you got to, I don't know how long they are. So will it fit, take the place of the other one? And then does the other one got to go outside? Or is there enough room to put both rigs in your firehouse right now?
Great question. Yes, it will fit. No, they won't both fit. We're actually working with Port Orange to house that truck at the training center.
The engine.
Yes, thank you. The engine. At the training center, and it will be housed there. Actually, and we're going to let them use it as a training engine from time to time. Plus, we'll have access to it, and it's just across the bridge.
So it's not going to be on property anymore.
No.
We just got the room for the one.
Correct.
Okay.
The one Quint and the two ambulances.
All right.
It will sit in pretty much the same footprint of the current engine. Just a little bit longer. It's pretty close in size to what we currently have.
Higher.
Same height. Okay. Yep.
So if I understand this right, you're asking for $80,000 this year, or for 24-25 to be approved, but then going forward will be the lease payments that will automatically, so actually we're kind of improving the forward for the next yes. 9 years, 210,000 yes. at the worst case scenario.
I guess the good news is, the answer is yes, but how we get there, if we get there, there's still more to be done as far as the financing and what the actual impact will look like. But before we go too far downrange with that, we want to make sure that the board's amenable to proceeding forward with that. And if they are, great. If they want to go, if you want to go in a different way, we'll go in a different way. But either way you look at it, we have to make a decision. We have to order something. That's not going to change. Well, I won't say we don't have to, but if you don't, there's repercussions in not doing that, and now is the time to do it. So, but that's a great question.
It just makes me think, I used to own a condo on the fifth floor, and I never even thought about fire rescue. It never even occurred to me.
And most people don't, and that's okay. That's our job.
So, Chief, you dropped, initially you said it on your memo, and we spoke a couple days ago, which I appreciate you and Deputy Chief Landerville meeting with me, and initially you said $100,000 deposit this year, now you have $80,000 listed on here. Is that the same, you found out the deposit is only $80,000 now, or?
Well, there's actually a range between $70,000 and $120,000, again, depending on where we land. It's probably about $100,000, and the good news is we actually have a capital fire department capital equipment fund that has about $115,000 in it already. So most, if not all, of the down payment would come from that fund. So there would be minimal impact on next year's budget for the down payment.
I got a quick question. Mm-hmm. The $1.5 million, once we order, is that set? Or can
yes.
it change in 3 years?
No, it's locked in.
And we can put as much money interest-free, if you will, between now and when we take delivery.
That is correct. And that's a great point. If I can tell you that just between last year and this year, the cost of an engine has gone up, I think, $25,000. And that's just because of the engine and the EPA requirements on the engine. And they're not going down. So that's another reason to get it locked in, because that's the best price you're going to get.
It's a guaranteed 3% increase every year. Yeah. On top of any other EPA or DOT requirement.
Yep. And that, real quick, when you're talking about maintenance, do we get a warranty, at least mechanically, on this truck?
Yes.
And can they do it locally, or do we have to drive it to Ocala to get it fixed? Or
both. They have mobile service, and if we need to take it back to the wherever we purchase it, if it's a
it won't be out of service longer because we had to drive it to Pensacola to get work on it.
No, and unfortunately, all the vendors are like that. Each vendor has a service center. I know one has one in Orlando, one's in Ocala. I think Sutphin's in Orlando too.
Fort Myers.
But they all have mobile service. Depending on the repair, it may have to go someplace. But they're all like that.
My only comment, I met with Chief Scales and Chief Lauderville last week, and I expressed my concerns with the aerial apparatus. It has to be implemented properly, and the town has to be willing to back the fire department with training mm-hmm. and operations of that apparatus. It's a very useful piece of equipment, but if it's not implemented properly, or the town's not willing to put the backing behind it for the training that's needed for the firefighters, then the apparatus is essentially useless and it won't be used properly and could put firefighters at risk. So that's one of my biggest concerns with it, is it's I know this board doesn't decide operationally or financially how that's supported, but that's the apparatus is a great apparatus, but it must be supported by the town.
How much extra training are we talking?
We can do it locally. What is this? How many hours is it, Joe? Just tell me how many hours. For the state, just tell me how many hours.
80.
Approximately
80 hours.
Per firefighter.
Yes, per firefighter. But again, we can do that locally. We can do it in Port Orange. And there's a state certification that they'll get as far as aerial apparatus is concerned. great point. That will be done before we take delivery on the apparatus. You have a commitment to that.
Yeah, we talked about that the other day.
My son finished it. It's also available in the board.
Yeah, so it's easy. It's readily available, and we are going to take advantage of that. So,
you were happy with the response?
On the training?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the training's there. It's just the town's going to have to make sure that, hey, every new firefighter that comes in, you're going to go to this class and support it financially. Otherwise, we're going to lose that training.
And we have the funds for that, the training? You feel confident?
We'll fund that, yes. And those funds, it's de minimis. It's not a lot of money. So,
cool.
Anything else on that? Great questions. Thank you. With that, I'm going to turn this over to Chief Glazier and let him talk about his public safety vessel.
Well, thanks, Dan. Good evening, everyone. Jeff Glazier, Ponce Inlet Police Department. The police department only has one capital project that you have in front of you, and it's the same one we spoke about in January, which is the public safety vessel to be used by both the police department and the fire department. Since January, I tried to sharpen my pencil a little bit and put together a good budget, and that's in front of you. And after the budget, you also have some emails, and I thought those were important also because it shows the discussions that I had with the purchasing agent from the Florida Sheriff's Association. She handles all the purchasing contracts for the state of Florida, for the Sheriff's Association. And I just think it shows that the fluid boat that we have that we're offering to you is one of the most inexpensive ways to get on the water. The ones that the Florida Sheriff's Association was able to get us are twice as much. And honestly, some of the vendors were simply just not responsive because once they saw what our budget was, they didn't feel they could get anywhere close to it. So the fluid 21-foot rigid inflatable is the boat that we've come up with. The representative is working with actually Florida police departments up and down the coast of Florida. It's a very popular boat, probably because of its price point. So they're selling a lot of those in the state of Florida now. The numbers below it are the budget for the first year of the vessel. And then I created an Appendix A just so you can see how I came up with those numbers if you had any questions. And then in terms of the justification for the boat, it really hasn't changed. You know that the population in Florida is exploding. The population in Volusia County is also growing. The population on our waterways is growing. And on any given weekend in the summertime, there's hundreds of boats and thousands of people that are in the Ponce Inlet boundaries on Disappearing Island, on our intercoastal waterways, at our marinas. And, you know, the threat to other boaters from reckless boaters, the threat to our wildlife has always been there. So I think the justification remains the same. And if anyone has any questions, I'm happy to answer.
I have a couple questions.
Yes.
Do you see any modification after you take delivery on the boat, whether it's to mount a backboard, a ring, if someone's handcuffed, so they don't jump out while you're bringing them back to shore?
I think it's always possible to have modifications once we start to use it, and I think once we see what we're up against on the waterway, what works best and what doesn't. We could have some modifications to it. One thing I did take out that I had spoken about in January was that water cannon. And simply from talking to the manufacturer, this is the smallest boat. They've never put one on this size. Most of the boats they put the water cannons on are 29 plus feet or 36 feet. And so there would have had to been a few modifications. The water cannon was between $8,000 and $10,000, and it took up a lot of space on the boat. So I simply eliminated it for now. But that could be a future modification if we determine, you know, yeah, it's probably a better idea to have it. But that, again, I would work that into a future budget.
One last question.
Yeah.
Do you want the boat?
Yeah, I think there's a good justification for it, certainly. Mm-hmm. Ponce Inlet has more square miles of water than we do land.
Can you remind us, I think we had some discussion on a used vessel and what your reasoning for for a used vessel was?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could, it's a good question. You can get on the water cheaper, but you're also getting somebody else's problems. And, you know, you'd really have to do your homework. you know, if depending on the vessel that you got, if it was only 1 or 2 years old and it was still under warranty, then I think that could be a possibility, and it still could be. We haven't purchased this boat yet, but I haven't been able to find any. The sheriff's department had a boat that they were selling, but it was much older. And again, anybody that has boats or has been around boats knows that in this saltwater condition, in this salty air, a lot of things happen to boats. And if it's not under warranty, then you could be setting yourself up for a pretty big budget impact if you have some problems. Yeah, so I do like the fact that if we do purchase a new boat, that we kind of have that bumper-to-bumper warranty for the first 3 years.